it was a, they do different yas. So some yas it's just an up, some yas it's just a down. I got really lucky on a year that it was an up and down.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 363 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know a little something new happening here, and that is the introduction of some Diz Runs swag, if you are so inclined. If you want to represent your love for the show in wherever, you know, different parts of the world that you may be, you can get a little magnet action to go on the back of your car, you know, similar to all of those different, you know, round or oval shaped white magnets with the black numbers or the black letters on it. This one says DRR on it for Diz Runs Radio. And I wish I could say there's something fancier to it than that, but that's what it is. I mean, it's a typical type of car magnet that you've seen a dozen times. But if you want to show your support for the show and the different places that you take the car, you can get one. And there's two ways you can do it. One, you can head over to dizruns.com/magnet, and they'll be available there. You click to order via PayPal. They're $10 a piece. Or if you want to become a patron of the show, anybody who's a $5 or more monthly patron can get one if they so desire. All you got to do is give me your address when you fill out your patron information, and I'll send one right along over to you. So that's today's announcement, the first of hopefully at least a handful of swag options that will be coming down the pipeline soon. So if you want to check that out, check out photos, head over to the Instagram account, Facebook page, whatever, all that good stuff. Or again, just head over to dizruns.com/magnet and you can check it out there and go ahead and order yourself one if you are so inclined. But now let's go ahead and get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is someone that is still on the new side when it comes to marathon running, but after finishing her debut race in 2 hours and 51 minutes, the future is looking mighty bright for her. In addition to her running, she's also currently working on her PhD in cognitive behavioral neuroscience, and she's also a regular blogger at Salty Running. So somehow in the midst of all that, she's also been able to find time to join me today. So it's my pleasure to be able to go a few easy miles with native New Zealander, Rochelle Bozzle. Thanks for joining us, Rochelle, and welcome to the show.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
And guys, if you want to connect with Rochelle, if you haven't done so already, you can find her on Instagram. Her handle there is at Rochelle Runs Gracie Sleeps, which is Gracie's the dog, who I've been informed she's actually like hanging out for the interview too. So we might have a little dog action, but that's all one word for Rochelle Runs Gracie Sleeps. And on the Twitter, you can find her there, and her handle is at Skeets Tweets, which Skeets is her maiden name, but that is, I'll spell that one for you because you probably won't get it on your own. It's S-C-E-A-T-S, and it's actually got an underscore in there, and then Tweets, T-W-E-E-T-S. But you know where to find all the links. I'll have everything that we talk about linked up and all of Rochelle's contact information in the show notes for today's episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/363. So, Rochelle, the way we start off the show is with a simple and straightforward question that for some folks is simple and easy to answer, and some people have to scratch their head and think about it and hem and haw a little bit and give 3 or 4 answers before they finally settle on one. But the question is, like I said, straightforward. It's just, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
You know, I would love to say the marathon, but I think I still have these rosy glasses after only having done one and it going well. You know, I understand that I was very fortunate for that to happen. So I think I would say the 10 miler. It's just, it's really fun. It doesn't beat you up, you know, like a marathon. You don't have to take as much time off. And in the DC area too, we're really fortunate in that we have a couple of pretty prolific 10-mile races. We have the Army 10, the Cherry Blossom. Yeah, so it's an unusual distance, but it's I always seem to be smiling when I run them, so we'll go with that.
Yeah, no, that works, and it's funny that I hadn't even thought about the fact that you're in kind of the DC area, even though I knew you were. But it's like every time I talk to somebody that's in certainly in and around DC, it's always the 10 miler, and even you know some of the other places in the Northeast, like I know Philly's got a good 10 miler, and
that's right.
You know, it seems like there's something about that area that brings out the 10 milers. I've run a 10 miler. One race twice, you know, it's an annual race that didn't run this year, so I don't know why, but yeah, it is a great distance. It's something I wish there were a few more opportunities to run those, because it is just that, you know, you can go hard, but it doesn't beat you up. Like everything you said, it's a great distance to run, and it'd be nice to have a few more options.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you, I'm assuming then that you've run Cherry Blossom. Like I've never heard anything bad about it, but what's your experience there?
You know, I actually have not run it.
Okay.
So we'll probably get to this in a little bit, but I took 4 years off running after college. So I, you know, we never got to race road races in college. So I've actually only run the Army 10.
Okay.
Of the two, and I've run a handful of other 10 milers in the area, but I'm very excited. I'll be doing Cherry Blossom in April.
Okay.
So I'm signed up. It can be windy. Mm-hmm. And it's a little exposed because it's around the water, but I mean, it sounds like it's a very well run event. So
yeah. Like I said, it's a common, like I said, everybody from the DC area that mentions 10 milers, they've all run that race, it seems like, and you'll be able to add your name to that list, you know, here soon. But yeah, I've never heard anybody say anything bad about it. So I'm sure you're going to have, as long as the weather cooperates, which is always the variable.
I know.
As long as the weather cooperates, it sounds like I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Cause it's like I said, everybody else seems to enjoy it. So hopefully you'll be there as well.
Very good.
So I do want to get into a little bit of the time off, but before we get into that part, I noticed when I was poking around in you a little bit on salty running and whatnot, that you mentioned that you kind of got a little bit of a late start into running. What brought you into the sport? And obviously, I mean, you're very competitive at it. So I guess we'll just go with that simple way to lead into it. What got you into running to begin with?
Yeah, absolutely. In high school, I didn't compete in track and field or anything. I played, you know, every single sport there was to play. And it wasn't until my final exams of my senior year, and I think it was out of procrastination from studying. I was just like, you know what, I don't want to study. I think I want to go outside and run. So I just kind of picked it up somewhat sporadically. And was fortunate enough, we grew up in an area where there was a decent running scene, and I was able to get picked up by the late Alan Potts, who actually coached his wife, Sylvia. She was a New Zealand Olympian in the 800 meters. So I had, about 3 months of kind of structured training, ran the New Zealand Secondary Schools road race and got picked up there and kind of shipped across over to the States, and that's kind of where it all began.
Is that, I guess you kind of said that the area you're in had some, you know, some running scene, but is running, especially kind of in the high school age or secondary school age, a big thing in New Zealand or not so much?
It is so different to the States. You know, you'll go to a national meet and there might be 20 or 30 people. Most of track is much smaller. There's no big track formal practices and teams. We had a grass 300 meter track at my high school. I'm saying I'm a lot.
That's all right.
So yeah, just an entirely different scene. And I think it was a blessing and a curse in that when I got over here, I was very fresh and green and hadn't been burned out like some of the girls you see in high school. But on the flip side of that, I didn't have any experiences, you know, coming into college, which turned out to be a little dangerous, I think.
Right. A grass track. What's it like running on a grass track? it's funny that you mentioned that, because just the other day I was flipping through Instagram and I saw somebody in, I think it was in Australia, but running on a grass track. And I was like, wow, that would be like, I don't know what, I mean, I would love the opportunity to try it, but it would be an interesting experience. What is it like from somebody whose firsthand has done it before?
It is very fast when you get on a rail track. There is Yeah, I remember our caretaker at school, he would drive around with his tractor on a roller before the school athletics meet to kind of smooth it out because, you know, it was a little lumpy and bumpy and people played soccer on the field, so there were lots of divots. But, I mean, good training for cross country. We, you know, would run, our cross country races were, you know, on farmland, up and down hills, not on the nice golf courses that we run on here right. in the States. Right. So, probably pretty translational to the sorts of surfaces that we would race on back home. But I had actually forgotten about the grass track. I'd have to look up and see what some of my old 400 splits were on there. Probably significantly slower than, you know, what we'd run now.
Yeah, I would imagine, but, you know, it's to be expected, certainly.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So you mentioned that coming over to the States and running in college wasn't, you know, maybe that lack of experience and being a little bit on the green side of things hurt you a little bit. What was, and we can go into as much detail or as you want or not, if it's something that you'd rather not talk about, but what was college like, college running like for you both, you know, I mean, maybe it's more of what was college like in general, both from the running side and from the cultural side of, you know, coming half a world away to do this whole thing, this American college running, you know, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, it was certainly an experience. And, you know, I look back on it and think, you know, there was certainly very low points, but it's kind of got me to, you know, where I am today. I wouldn't be in the States now if it wasn't for running. So I am thankful for, you know, the good and the bad things. But I think, you know, everything happened very suddenly when I started running. I'd only been running a few months, and then, you know, within a year I'm half a world away. I'm 17 or 18 years old. You know, you're very impressionable, and you know, and I was improving very quickly because, you know, it's this law of diminishing returns, right? It's like I never had really an endurance base before, so I could go from, you know, an 18-minute 5K to a 17-minute 5K 2 months later to a 16 something. So yeah, it was tough, and you know, it's competitive and girls are competitive, and it was an interesting time. I'm not entirely sure that the school was a good fit for me. I ended up, you know, falling into some bad habits that I saw other people doing, and I thought that would help me. So I thought that if I didn't eat like everyone else was doing, I would get quicker, and you know, sure enough I did. Dropped a lot of time, dropped a lot of weight, and then, you know, slowly and surely it all kind of caught up with me and it came to a grinding halt, we will say. But you can fake it for a while, it turns out, and run fast, but you'll probably be pretty miserable.
Right. Yeah. I've heard somebody say, and not necessarily related to running, but, you know, don't take shortcuts because they take too long. And it kind of sounds like maybe that was the case where you got that initial kind of benefit, if you want to call it a benefit. But eventually it caught up to you, and then it was not a good situation to be in.
Oh, absolutely. You know, for probably 2.5 years, I was, you know, running like crazy and running good times. But, you know, the other side of it was, you know, I was so sick. And then, you know, then I took 4 years off, you know, quit running altogether, threw out my shoes, was like, this has just destroyed me. I never want to do this again. And it was only like this time last year that, you know, I was just like, something's missing. And what is it? And, you know, I slowly got back into running. So, you know, I'm glad I've come back to it, but it certainly took a really long time to feel that, you know, I could do it and do it properly again.
What was it that got you back into running? I mean, was it just, I mean, obviously you said something was missing, but was there an incident? Was there something where, you know, I mean, kind of what brings to that timeline of like you said, about a year ago, what got you back into the sport?
So I think actually during that 4 years, there was maybe three or four times when I tried to go out and run again. But being me, you know, I'd have my GPS watch on and I'd go out there and, you know, I'd see I was running 9 minute miles. And I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, I don't want to run 9 minute miles. This sucks. I hate it. Blah, blah, blah. You know, so, you know, back down the rabbit hole. But I don't know, just this time last year, I think maybe I was like stressed out with grad school probably. and just decided like, you know, I really need to do something for me. And so I found the DC Roadrunners Club. They have, you know, tons of members, and they have all of these local low key races. So, you know, I signed up with them and started going to their, you know, they have a long run and a track workout and a tempo. And I just started going there and hanging out with the people at the back of the pack and, you know, made a lot of really good friends. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I say eventually, but, you know, it was in like a week. I remember saying to my husband, I was like, I think I want to run a marathon. And he looks at me, he's like, oh God, no. And I was like, I think I could break 4 hours. And that was where it began, wanting to break 4 hours in the marathon. And about a month or two later, I was like, you know, maybe I should, I wonder how fast I have to run to qualify for Boston. And, you know, now I, you know, just ran a 2:51. So mm-hmm. I think I accomplished step one and two.
Yeah, I would say that you accomplished the first couple of steps. I mean, where, and obviously it's impossible to completely predict the future, but where, I mean, what are the sites? I mean, you know, step one is done. So what's, you know, step two, three, four, where is the tentative plan looking like? Or is it just finish grad school first and then?
Oh, goodness. That is a marathon in and of itself.
Yeah.
I would like, maybe not in 2017, but I would, you know, maybe 2018, make a, you know, a solid attempt at a qualifying time for the trials. Mm-hmm. Whether or not I will actually be able to compete because of my citizenship currently, mm-hmm. Still being, you know, a New Zealander. But it would still, you know, it would still be something nice to kind of strive for and hopefully achieve. The qualifying standards for the New Zealand teams are unfortunately very, very stringent. And it's kind of, you know, hurting the sport back home to a degree because there's, you know, there's just not the money in New Zealand that there is here. So to be looked at for even the Commonwealth Games for New Zealand, I would need to run a 2:31 or a 2:29 wow. for the Olympics, which is, I mean, that's insanity. There's no... That's not within my realm, mm-hmm. which is fine. I mean, you know, there are limits and, you know, I have lots of other things that I need to do besides running. Running is something that, you know, I do because I enjoy it and it makes me happy, but it's not about to govern, you know, our life. Mm-hmm. So I got sidetracked on the short term. Yeah, still, TBD.
Gotcha. No, that's fine. You know, and I mean, shoot, like if in a year you went from the goal of being, well, maybe 4 hours to, you know, to actually running one in under three, you know, like no, I guess from my perspective, it's like, there's no reason to put any limits or any hard caps or any hard, you know, decisions at this point. You just kind of keep working and see where things are, you know, 6 months from now, 8 months from now, a year from now, and, you know, roll with it as it gets here.
Exactly. There's no, I mean, I'm 26, there's no rush. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my body is still kind of, you know, adapting to this running thing that I've reintroduced. You know, for the 4 years I took off was a long time. And actually, when I started back running, I ended up with a pretty bad tibial stress fracture in May. So I lost, gosh, how much? Probably about 12 weeks of training. Mm. So that's, what, 3 months?
Yeah, so you've been back for a year, but really only 9 months.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm still just trying to, you know, give my body some time to catch up and it's still figuring out what I'm doing to it.
Oh, goodness. Definitely. Kind of shifting gears a little bit and I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the grad school, the PhD work, things of that nature. I don't know, maybe the most obvious question, how do you find time between like I was in grad school for a couple of years just working on my master's degree and you know, like I was doing an assistantship and it was like I'm working 60 hours a week between the assistantship and going to classes and studying and then trying to be home with my wife once in a while. And it's like, I mean, I wasn't much of a runner then because I didn't have much time, quite frankly. You know, how are you finding balance between running and married and you know, and school?
That is an excellent question. And there is a very delicate balance, I think, that we have achieved in our house. I get up very early and, you know, get my training done, all the main sort of workout that I have. I do that. And then I am at school all day working on my research. I teach. I have an internship at NIH. And then if I have something in the afternoon, I usually try and get that done before Matt, my husband, comes home. So, you know, once he gets home from work, we usually have about maybe 30 minutes before I go to bed.
Right.
So we eat very quickly, you know, talk about our days, hang out for a little. And then I'm usually in bed, lights out, before him. But, you know, it gives him some time to, you know, I get my time in the morning and he gets his time in the evening. I try not to work as much. Before I was running, I used to work all weekend, every night, you know, it's just worked. But now I'm, you know, really much more mindful of finding that balance. So if I work for 10 hours during the day, I really don't need to work, you know, more at night. You know, research isn't going anywhere. It's kind of like, you know, people trying to qualify for Boston and, you know, just missing out. And, you know, Boston's not going anywhere. The marathon's not going anywhere. Neither is research. I mean, it's very slow moving. So I just try and keep that in mind when I'm feeling stressed.
Do you, and maybe you're still kind of figuring this out, but I've talked to some folks that have been, you know, maybe slightly more on the elite, sub-elite level, but certainly, you know, not ridiculously farther, you know, ahead of you. And with where you are, still only been, you know, kind of seriously at this kind of distance running for so short. Maybe you might catch up to them real quickly. But anyway, I mean, folks that have been in, you know, PhD programs in school, some that have realized that for themselves, they kind of need to pick one or the other. Some that have realized or found that by having kind of two distinct focuses of really running and giving everything to their running. And then when they're not running, they're giving everything to their research and their studies and their, you know, finishing school. Have you found yet if there's, you know, if having those two separate sides of the coin is helpful? I mean, I'm assuming that it hasn't been a huge hindrance yet because you're still doing both, but, you know, how does having those two equally demanding things, work for you?
I think for me, it works well. When I'm busy, I tend to be at my best. Mm-hmm. Like when I have a lot of time, I'm just not as productive. With that said though, like what I love to have all the time in the world to train and, you know, take care of all the little stuff that, you know, I bitch about, oh, I didn't have time to stretch, or, you know, I was stretching in the shower at the gym, or, you know, I'm, you know, in class teaching and my compression tights are sticking out from under my skirt, or, you know, just this constant kind of, you know, catch up that I feel like I'm playing. But I think it is really important for me, especially, to have an identity outside of running, because I haven't always been a runner. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's tough and it sucks sometimes, but I mean, you get it done. And I think it's important that I, you know, I'm kind of focusing on finishing school and, you know, trying to think of, you know, what I'm going to do after school with a PhD, be it in academia or in industry, or if I want to take a break. Yeah, I definitely feel much more balanced doing two than I do just doing one. Like when I was just in school and all I would do was work, running definitely helps to kind of alleviate some of that. Although I'm not sure everyone's thrilled when I leave at lunchtime sometimes and say, right. Oh, I'm just going to like go pool run or, you know, go run 10 miles. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, there she goes again. But, you know, it works for me. So we'll keep it up.
I'd be curious, you know, with what you're studying, break that down for those of us and myself certainly included that aren't quite sure. Like, put it in plain English. What is cognitive behavioral neuroscience? What are you researching and studying?
Yeah, it's, you know, I wish they didn't call it that, because every time I tell someone, you know, oh, I'm studying cognitive behavioral neuroscience, they look at me and their eyes glaze over and they're like, oh, now we can't talk. Mm-hmm. So basically you can kind of think of it as like social neuroscience. So I study, sort of like human communication, emotion recognition, biological motion. So sort of how our body movements convey sort of feelings and emotions and intent. I look at this in typical individuals as well as individuals with different sorts of psychopathology. Primarily, we use fMRI, so functional magnetic resonance imaging, to kind of look at the neural basis of these different processes. So we're very fortunate, actually, at George Mason, where I am, where I've had access to a 3-Tesla scanner, so we can run all our own subjects on campus. We have, you know, a wide array of different sorts of neuroimaging tools. And so that's mainly what I look at, just brains and brains looking at faces. And just trying to really figure out, it's much more complex than what it seems like. Oh, I see you smiling, you must be happy, kind of thing. But we think about individuals, for example, on the autism spectrum, you know, a smiling person or social feedback is not as salient to them as it is to us. And that, you know, that stems from a structural difference. You know, their brains are different than ours. They're shaped differently. They have different sorts of grooves. Oh, I could talk about this all day. Stop me.
No. I love it. I love it.
But yeah, so what else do we look at? We also look more recently at social networks. So how people transfer information between people, like in novel situations. So when people are just artificially put into a group and say, okay, you're team red, you're team blue, versus, you know, maybe a running group, how do runners convey information between each other? If we all know each other, then we don't have to tell everyone. I could just tell you, and it would be assumed that you would tell, you know, Rachel, Zach, and Ryan.
Right.
So yeah, I like people, and I like, you know, knowing how people work.
Where did the interest in this type of science come from?
So I was very fortunate in that when my undergrad running and everything was, you know, kind of hitting the fan, that I had been accepted into an honors research program. So I was working one-on-one with a member of the faculty on a research project, actually looking at eye tracking in autism. So I was, you know, very heavily involved in research. So I didn't run my senior year. So, you know, I was able to go straight from running and just threw myself into research. And, you know, that was kind of my compensation for, you know, now I had all this time, I wasn't running. And, you know, I just kind of got this research bug. And for anyone who does research, I think they'll be able to relate to just like how fun it is. Gosh, I'm a loser. I'm sitting here and my husband's just like, oh my God, she's nuts. But yeah, you know, I just got so involved in the research and the populations I was working with. And I was like, you know, it's, you know, looking at the one little sulcus that I look at in the brain, it's not Nobel Prize worthy, but you know, it's interesting. And if it can help us gain an understanding of, you know, how things work or don't work, that's really important and should be explored.
What, I'm trying to think of a good, I'm fascinated by the brain, and I've never really like kind of studied this or really talked about or read about or anything of this kind of thing that you're doing. But, are there, you know, I don't even know where to go with it. So maybe I'll move off of it. But I just think, I mean, our brains are just, you know, from what I do know, and my background is in athletic training and sports medicine, so it's much more of the body and less of less of the brain. But I mean, I've just in my experience and from stuff I looked at, like our brains are so complex. I wouldn't even know where to begin studying it. But it's something. It's something else that just what our brains are capable of, and how, you know, from what I've heard, and maybe you can confirm this. Maybe this will be kind of the closing question of the brain subject. But you know, running really is, and cardio activities in general are really good for brain health and improving the synapses and things of that nature. So it's cool that you're kind of, you know, looking at the brain from both sides, both the research side and, you know, with the running side, how it can improve your brain. Like I said, it's fascinating. I could let you go on forever, but we'd probably, if we haven't lost everybody yet, if we go on too much longer, we'd probably lose everybody from this chat. So maybe we should move on a little bit and get back to a little bit of running at some point.
I promise we'll get back to running.
Yes. But you know, and like I said before we started, I love taking the little side routes, and I've gone down some crazy rabbit holes before, and you know, people lose that episode, they lose that episode, whatever. They'll come back for the next one. But hopefully we still got a few people around. But I would love to ask, and this is something that I think would be very pertinent to a lot of folks. You know, you talked about when we were just getting into kind of the balance of the PhD work and the running, about finding the time for the little things. And that's something that, that I'm harping on the people that I coach all the time. If I'm honest, I need to harp a little bit more on myself all the time, because I'm, you know, I'm just as guilty as everybody. I'm busy. I want to get my runs in, and I've got podcast stuff to do. I got work to do. I got coaching to do, blah, 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 blah. I got all these things. And then by the end of the day, it's like, well, shoot, I didn't get my, you know, my yoga in today. I didn't get my foam roll. I didn't get my cross. I mean, whatever it is for that day, but it seems like more days than not, I didn't get the little things in that I wanted to and had scheduled for that day. So, not only with, you know, trying to ask maybe how you find the time for it, but you admitted that it's difficult. At somebody at your level that's running, you know, sub 3 hour marathons, how much do you notice, or how much have you noticed the importance of being consistent with the little stuff and how it impacts your performance when life gets crazy and you don't get to it as much versus, you know, when you're able to keep everything in, you know, compartmentalized and do what you're supposed to do on all the different avenues and stay on top of those little things that some of us, and again, I'm guilty of this as much as anybody, push off because, you know, there's just quote unquote, not enough time that day.
Yeah, I definitely. In regards to the little things, I try to make it as easy as possible. Like if I need to go to the gym or need a whole bunch of equipment, that's, to me in the evening, it's such a hindrance. Mm. So, you know, for better or worse, our living room is full of foam rollers and TheraBands and massage sticks. So, you know, every time if we're sitting watching TV or I'm just doing nothing, I would just get on the floor and start foam rolling or, mm-hmm. you know, doing body weight strength. And I'm really fortunate in that, you know, I think my coach is aware of this for me. So most of my strength work is actually mainly body weight. Like I really don't need a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. which that definitely helps, because if I can just do it in my living room while I'm cooking dinner, you know, in between reps, go and, you know, add some vegetables or mm-hmm. stir something, that makes, you know, makes it much more achievable than, oh, you know, Matt just got home and I'll see you, now I have to go to the gym.
Right.
That's kind of, I don't know if I'm answering the question. Oh, do I notice a difference? I just feel better for taking care of that stuff. Like mm-hmm. I just have this kind of constant fear that if I don't do the little things, that something's going to blow up, like my shin or, you know, so I like to walk around the house with TheraBands on. I try to do a lot. I feel like lateral movement is very mm-hmm. helpful for me. I think my hips are just kind of weak for whatever reason. I mean, I don't think that's uncommon in women, but I really do try and do a lot of hip strengthening exercises. Mm-hmm. And that seems to kind of ward off injuries, because I've had a couple little niggles here and there, and they can be resolved by just some, you know, easy. I mean, you probably know a ton of exercises. Mm-hmm. But just easy sort of, you know, lateral abduction, simple movements just to help keep them strong.
Yeah. And I, you know, one of the things that's sticking out to me from what you're saying right there is that, you know, when you notice it, when it's little, it's easy to solve, you know, so it's that paying attention to your body and, you know, taking kind of, you know, just a minute or 2 minutes every day to just kind of do a quick inventory of how everything's feeling. And if you notice something that for 2 or 3, 4 days in a row is kind of not quite right, like what can you do today to solve it instead of waiting three or four weeks from now to when it's, you know, screaming and barking at you?
That's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, because then now you're talking not running for a while. And now you're talking of like really serious, you know, possibly having to go to PT or seeing somebody, as opposed to, you know, what you can do with a foam roller or a TheraBand or something like that in your home to alleviate the problem. And now you're, you know, back to being good. So, it's definitely, you know, definitely something that's a struggle, like I said, but it's important. And especially as you increase your volume, increase your intensity, stuff like that, you gotta stay on top of it.
Yeah. And you know, you don't even have to do it for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Like even if you have five minutes, you know, three times a week, that's better than nothing. Right.
Right.
And, you know, I like to make achievable goals. So, you know, I, you know, start off with things like do strength training 3 times a week or, you know, something like that. Just a little goal that I can check off. And then if I have time for more, then that's great. But if I don't, then at least, you know, I've got, you know, I've addressed the kind of points that I know need a little bit mm-hmm. of extra TLC.
Yeah. No, it's all about finding time and I don't think there's too many folks that can claim that they're any more busy than anybody else, you know, but some people make a point to find in the time. And, you know, some people it's like, well, I'd rather spend 2 hours on Facebook, which I'm guilty of maybe spending a little bit too much time on Facebook too. But, you know, it's just a matter of, like, you know, again, making it a priority. And also, like you said, which I think was great, is, you know, how you can mix it into the other things you're doing. So if you're already going to be, you know, cooking dinner, can you do some squats in the kitchen or whatever it might be to, you know,
I'm sitting here doing pigeon pose as we're talking. So right. They case in point.
Exactly. You fit it into your day and all of a sudden, you know, you're actually multitasking where it works instead of, you know, we talk about multitasking with your brain. Maybe here we go back to the brain again, but you know, you multitask with your brain and you're doing two things half-assed as opposed to one thing all the way done. But something like this, where you can do the squats while you're cooking, or you can do some stretching while you're on the phone or whatever you're doing. Now all of a sudden you really are doing two things equally well at the same time. So another thing I noticed when I was poking around on, I think this was maybe on the Salty Running stuff as well, but I can't remember, wherever I noticed this, that you know, when we talked about the marathon and possibly representing the or qualifying for the trials and whatnot, said that the status for or to get into the New Zealand trials was pretty difficult, but you have had a little bit of experience of representing New Zealand at a world level event, right?
Yeah. So, I'm aging myself. when was it? In 2009. Yeah. I ran the World Mountain Champs in, Medesimo in Italy. It's right up on the Swiss border. Mm. So I ran the New Zealand National Mountain Running Race. Again, this is, just a comparison. I don't know how many, I mean, mountain running is, you know, smaller, it's a niche sort of race, but, you know, I think in my race there was probably 20 girls or something. I'd have to go back and look, but, you know, a very, very small, scarce field versus how many would line up here in the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you're running up, anytime you, to me at least, and maybe it's just because I'm nowhere near the level, but anytime you're lining up with your country's name on your kit, like that's a pretty big, I don't care if two people are doing it or 2,000, like that's to me, that seems like it's got to be a pretty big honor.
Yeah, no, it was really special, actually. And I just got into the States, like I just got in here for school. So it was kind of a nice little trip to, you know, get some Kiwi FaceTime for me. But yeah, I mean, I would love to wear a black singlet again. You know, if that opportunity arose, mm-hmm. I would absolutely take it. But I definitely have some work to go first.
Right. What is it like, though? I mean, you know, and again, this is one of those questions that I do enjoy asking anybody who's ever had the chance, whether it's at, you know, whatever level it is. You know, I've had folks that are, you know, triathletes, ultra runners, whatever, that have represented their countries at different events. I mean, again, like I can't begin to imagine. It's just not something I don't see a scenario where I'll be representing the United States at any point, anytime soon. Maybe if I'm still running when I'm like 90 and there's like three of us that are still running when we're 90, like then maybe I could have the opportunity. But, I mean, you know, what is it like when you open the package that's got, you know, the, you know, like for your case, the black singlet, what is that moment like for you?
Well, you know, going back to the funding in New Zealand, we actually had to pay for our uniforms, to be on our New Zealand team. So I do remember that the kit was like $1,500 or something. Wow. And I remember like putting on the jacket being like, oh shit, this is like the most expensive jacket I'll probably ever wear. And I still have it and I still wear it. I mean, the stuff is good. I mean, it's very exciting nonetheless. And to know that only, you know, a handful of people have that singlet or those shorts or that jacket, it's, you know, it's a privilege and not a lot of people get to, you know, get to do that. So it was fun. It was a good experience.
What was the race like?
So I've been, I guess since I haven't, you know, raced a whole lot in comparison to, there's the dog, told you. Sorry about that.
No worries.
I've been very lucky in that I really haven't had a lot of bad races, but World Champs was without a doubt my worst race ever. They do different years. So some years it's just an up, some years it's just a down. Mm. I got really lucky on a year that it was an up and down.
It was both.
Yeah. And we'd been, staying at pretty high elevation for about 5 days before the race. And I wasn't doing very well at You know, at this elevation, I was getting migraines, I was getting bleeding noses. I just really didn't feel very well. Just very lethargic, and it was fine. We, you know, got into the race, and, you know, just a phenomenal experience with just this huge melting pot of girls to race with. And, you know, I was, had been training in New Zealand, so I'd been scrambling up and down some pretty good trails and made it to the top of the, mountain, you know, on the top three or four. Actually, the girl who subsequently won was right on my shoulder, and I got to the top of the hill and just kind of passed out. So yeah, hypoxia is not cool. We learned. So my eyes kind of, you know, I'll never forget this. You know, my eyes just rolled back in my head, and, you know, I stumbled, managed to stumble my way down the hill. And all I remember hearing over the loudspeakers was like, New Zealand is in trouble. You know, and there were people trying to pull me off the course, but of course I don't want to DNF, you know, world champs. I'd rather come last. I'd have to look. You know, I tried so hard to wipe this from my memory. I don't think I was lost, but I think I only beat a few people.
Right.
But I finished, and it was, but you know, it like didn't even matter. It wasn't, you know, you usually think that a bad race is, it's going to be so embarrassing and you're going to be, you know, so upset and, you know, all these things, but none of those things kind of happened. Everyone was, you know, super support. I mean, I think they're probably very worried, right. You know, when I was in the medic tent. But, you know, just it kind of happened and it passed, and, you know, I lived and ran good races after that. So, you know, it wasn't a defining moment, you know, maybe it was. I need to think about that a little more. But yeah. Interesting. Not many people know about my world champs experience. I usually don't talk about it.
Well, sorry to bring that up if that was a little bit of a sore spot. But
good therapy.
Yeah. Do you stay in touch with any of the folks from the other countries that or I'm assuming you got to meet several people and do you stay in touch, or do you kind of lose contact over the years?
So actually, one of the guys who was on the U.S. team that year was a freshman with me in college. So we, you know, hung out when we were in Italy, and it was kind of nice, actually, because I got to kind of tag along with the American team a little, who had much better quarters than we did. You know, they had a better hotel, they had better food, you know, it's great to be an American, right? So I kind of got carted along with them, which was nice. And I still keep in touch with one or two of them. And some of the senior women who were on the New Zealand team, actually, I keep in touch with. But that's probably about it.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, you know, like you said, it's something that, you know, even though it didn't go well, I still had to have been an honor, and certainly, you know, something that for whatever reason, maybe not for the best reasons, but you're not going to forget anytime soon what that whole thing was. You know, it's just the experience in general. It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
So as we're getting towards the end here, Rochelle, the way that I've been ending the show recently, actually, maybe I don't need to say recently anymore. Maybe it's been long enough that it's been not so recent. But regardless, I'd like to ask what I've been calling a philosophical question. So something that's completely, you know, open-ended. Obviously, no right answers, no wrong answers. Just your perspective on something related to running. And, you know, sometimes the answers are three or four words. Sometimes they're three or four sentences. Sometimes they're 10 or 15 minutes. And all forms of answers are perfectly acceptable. But I'd be curious for you, for somebody who's time running has been A, disjointed, and B, frankly, not that long compared to some of the folks that I've had on here. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, that's a great, I love that.
I would be curious, you know, in the time that you have run, and really been in and around the sport, what has running taught you, about yourself? What lessons have you learned as a runner that you've been able to use and apply in areas of your life outside of running itself?
Yeah, I think being not a lifelong runner, but even the time I've spent running, I know that like running is something that I really need. I don't feel like quite done if I haven't done it. Even that time when I wasn't running, you know, I didn't feel great for those 4 years. I just knew that my body was not ready to, you know, kind of undergo that again. But I think just, you know, my personality lends itself to sort of working and grinding things out. So I think that sort of translates well to running. Did I learn that from running? No, but I think running definitely kind of helps me practice those sorts of things when, you know, I'm sitting at the lab late at night trying to, you know, write a code and I want to quit. It's like, well, you know, if you're in the middle of a workout, are you going to quit? No. Then, well, shit, now I have to finish figuring this out. You know, putting one leg in front of the other is much easier than a lot of things we do in life. So I think, I don't know.
No, that's...
Gosh, I wish I had an answer.
No, I think that
that's like a half answer.
That was an answer. It's no halfways. Like I said, it's certainly something where there's no rights, no wrongs, and you know, no there's very rarely if ever any identical answers. You know, everybody's got their own take on it, and I think that, I mean, what you said, I think a lot of us can relate to that just that perseverance, that continuing to push on when we don't want to is. You know, anybody who's ever run a marathon, although I don't know, maybe at 2:51, maybe it's not as bad as those of us that are running at 4 hours, but there's times when you want to quit and you keep pushing on. And that's certainly something that can translate to other areas of life as well.
Yeah. And you never regret going for a run.
Right.
Right. Like the days when you don't go out, I regret that because, you know, I miss the weather. I miss how it feels, all these things. But once you get out there and get over the cold or whatever reason you don't want to go out, as soon as you're out there, you forget about all of that. And, you know, that's really important to me. It's kind of, you know, my, you know, religion if I did that. So yeah, I think it's just people need to figure out like why they do it. And I think once you figure out why you want to run, it just is totally worth it.
Yes. Yes. Totally agree. One last thing, just because I'm curious, do you have a next marathon scheduled yet, or is that still up in the air?
You know, I actually this morning think we figured that out. This is the randomest marathon ever, but I think I'm going to run the Fargo Marathon.
Okay.
In May. Yeah. I found it a couple of weeks ago and, you know, it's flat. It's in May, so it gives me a little bit of time. And I've been emailing the elite coordinator up there and he just, you know, seems like really nice and excited to, you know, try and put together a good field of women. So I think I'm going to give that a crack. And I've never been to North Dakota. So, you know, here we go.
Now
we have a reason.
Check it out. Definitely. Well, good luck with that. And just thanks for your time today, Rochelle. It's been a pleasure and good luck in Fargo. Good luck. Enjoy Cherry Blossom. And whatever the future holds for you, I'm looking forward to continuing to follow along and stay in touch, hopefully. And obviously wish you nothing but the best going forward, in the short term and in the long term. So, thanks for your time and all the best going forward.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Rochelle and myself. And as always, I would love to know what stood out to you from this particular episode. What thing that we talked about really resonated the most with you? For me, I think it kind of came down to kind of two things, but you know, two things that kind of are the same thing, if you will. And that is, you know, the struggle and some of the tips that Rochelle shared with balancing it all. I mean, she's clearly busy, as we all are, you know, quite frankly, we're all busy. And, you know, she still finds ways to make it work and to make her relationship with her husband work, you know, on top of the running and the early mornings and her work and her schooling and all that stuff. But also what she said about the fact that, you know, you never regret a run that you take. I know for me, there's been plenty of times where I miss my run in the morning and like, oh, I'll make it up later. I'll get it in at some point later today. And later today sometimes happens, but not very often. But getting up a little bit early or moving around the schedule or whatever it takes to get that run in and to make it happen, never had a regret for those days. So I can completely agree. And, you know, just a good reminder for me is things are busy right now and a lot of things going on kind of behind the scenes. You know, finding time and making time is important. And you never regret those runs that you find a way to make them happen. So just a little food for thought for myself and maybe for you as well. But whether that was what resonated with you or not, I would love to know what it is. What did stand out to you for this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/363. And leave a comment there, and that way others can see what you had to say, and maybe can take a little food for thought from your feedback, and you like and you likewise can from them. So apparently my tongue is getting tired, so it's time to wrap this episode up. But thanks for listening, and if you want a little DizRuns car magnet swag, you know where the place is, DizRuns.com/magnet, and through Patreon for $5 a month, you can get yourself a magnet. And if you have any questions on that or, forget those places, obviously the show notes are a good place to find that information as well. So check that out, DizRuns.com/363. And with that, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up for today. Thanks for listening, guys. It's always, always, always appreciated. And I hope you have a great rest of the day, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon. Take care, guys.